middle out of five. And here's why. Ansi Salay, if we've learned one thing about him, oh, this dude ain't messing around. He is as serious as a heart attack, and he is not, there's no platitudes, there's no Landryisms, there's no who and the ethos and all that kind of stuff. As a matter of fact, he doesn't like that kind of stuff, and he's made that publicly known. So I think this is a no-nonsense approach. I think this is a do what's best for the team, in my opinion, approach. And I guess I'm a little surprised only because it was made clear, I think, on several occasions, though, that Trae Young would like this thing to get done. So that's the only reason I'm even putting it at a five. But, yeah, I'll give it a five. Ansi Salay, he's not messing around, man.
He is not. He has not made it known that they want to maintain cap flexibility going forward these next couple of years. That's what the deals that were signed for. And a deal that was not signed was Trae Young's extension. So we see Trae has the player option next year. So we'll see what happens.
And to your point, even the moves that were made, not really for the long-term future.
No.
Maybe outside of Nara.
Nara got the longest long-term deal of anybody they signed. Luke Kennard was, what, a two-year deal?
And Kristaps is one.
And Fale Dante was a one-year deal. The 6'8 guy they got from Orlando a couple days ago was a one-year deal. So you got pieces, but they're not pieces that are here for the long term. All right. It was announced today, the Braves starters for this weekend series.
Oh boy.
Against the Mets.
Oh boy.
There was a name that was very curiously missing because his turn in the rotation would have been up in that series. And that is one Spencer Strider. Not in the rotation this weekend against the Mets. Is that good or bad?
Well, what did we talk about last night, Oren? Three options for Strider. You can continue to run him out there. Again, the stat is as follows. Don't adjust your radio. 11 innings pitched in his last three starts. 30 hits allowed. 20 earned runs allowed in his last three starts. Something's got to give. Are they giving him rest? Are we going to find out he's hurt? So I'm not surprised by this at all. I'm just extra curious to find out what the front is going on. Is he hurt? Does he need more time? Are they shutting him down? Are they moving him to the bullpen? I think it's all on the table.
It was very curious because, and I think it was something too that, like for instance, today with the Austin Riley news, they snuck it in the second half of a tweet.
Why do they keep doing this?
The first half of the tweet was all these roster moves. The second half, additionally,
it was a second tweet.
Yeah.
It wasn't even like in the first tweet. No. It was a subtweet.
Additionally, oh yeah, Austin Riley had surgery for a core muscle.
And he's out for the year. What was the other thing they did with that? Was it Acuña?
Yeah, it was Acuña.
Acuña
being out.
This is, fool me once. I mean, didn't Braves marketing PR team? What are we doing?
It's the ultimate Friday news dump of a tweet.
Come on, guys.
Additionally, you got hammered
for this the first time.
Just
give us the most pertinent information, man.
I can guarantee you, especially with Austin Riley, we'll be more happy that he's taking care of whatever he needs to take care of.
Than the signing of Cal Quantrill.
Yeah, Cal Quantrill, or putting Luke Williams on the 15-day IL or whatever it was. Yeah.
Priorities, man.
Priorities. Staying with the Braves, sir. You mentioned Hurston Waldrop. 4-0, sub-1 ERA.
0.73.
He's doing the thing that all young pitchers need to do, which is not walk batters. That gets you in so much trouble as a young pitcher. Just keeping it clean, keeping it very clean with these starts. Is he in the rotation next year?
He's got to be. I don't even think it's a question, though, because you've lost both Smith, Shaver, and Holmes, presumably, for the year, right? Lopez is coming back after a year of not pitching. Sale will have made three starts in 8 months after injuring his ribs, diving for a ball. Schwellenbach, I don't think we're going to know the status of him until next year. I saw from Mark Bowman today that he's not expected to pitch again this year. So Waldrop, you would think, is going to be in the mix, right? He's got to be, especially if he keeps playing like this. I'm going to say definitely at this point, for sure.
All right. We talked with Matt Mercial earlier from the Orlando Sentinel, and big conversation was SEC going to 9 conference games. I'm going to ask you, Chris, the SEC going to 9 conference games means blank to college football.
Shame. Shame on you, SEC, for caving. No, I'm just kidding. Listen, it's just getting with the times. That's all it is. It's just the modernization of the game, right? Every other major conference is doing it. It makes more sense. And it allows you to really boost your schedule. It really does, especially if you have a meaningful game that comes up in the season that would have otherwise been, you know, Marshall or, you know, Alcorn State or one of these layover games that they give you. So I have no problem with it. I don't really think it matters for the top of the conference, but for the middle of the pack, it could mean something if you have to play an extra tough opponent in terms of deciding maybe a playoff bubble or where you are in the standings. So in terms of like if you had to rank it big deal, small deal, I think it's more of a small deal than anything else, honestly. I think it's more of just, again, you're just getting with the times.
All right. Question number 5, sir. I had tonight a fantasy football draft of college football that went 19 rounds.
So before you ask a question, I've never done a college football fantasy season before.
It is.
What is it like? So I'm very familiar with NFL fantasy. Yeah. How do you compare it?
It's Power 5. You only do Power. Well, our league is only Power 5 schools. The league is set up to where it's super flex. So you play two quarterbacks. Essentially, well, it's a two quarterback. You can't put a quarterback in the flex. It's a two quarterback league. Two quarterbacks, two running backs, one wide receiver, one tight end, and then the rest of the positions are just positional flex players, one defense and one kicker. But it is all Power 5 conference teams, so you have to kind of maneuver and search around. And, you know, the NFL is 32 teams. College football and Power 5, it's a whole lot more. So and after about round 5 or 6, you start delving into guys who you might know, guys who you saw a flash about maybe in an article, or guys that are local and you just happen to recognize the name. But
oh, it's George's fourth receiver. Let me take him.
Basically, it gets down to that right there. My question, though, about that was I sat here and I did it, and I did 19 rounds up there. Is there an activity, sir, or one activity that you can do and sit down for the longest period of time and not have to get up? Just you don't want to get up at all. It just has your attention for that long.
It's a good question. You know what? I'll say this is something that's come up on the show a lot recently. Back in the day, Oren, we used to play Rock Band for hours.
Just getting at it.
Hours on hours. I've played those songs hundreds of times over and over. That was something me and the boys used to just do forever. The other thing, in college, it was Super Smash Brothers tournaments because we had real stakes on the line. It was like who had to buy the beer, who had to buy dinner, who had to clean the apartment, who had to go move the cars from the snow. It was a real big deal. So I would say like really long video game sessions with stakes on the line for me.
Okay, and the final one, sir, our customary Thursday question, sir. What you got going on this weekend, Chris?
I was hoping you would ask because I need your help. The girlfriend is going out of town.
The entire weekend?
Girls trip to Helen. And I have the Falcons flyover tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have the rest of the weekend off. Oren?
Wow.
What should I do? Should I go? Now, here's one thing I really want to do. I'm going to go see Weapons.
Okay.
I really want to see that movie.
I've heard a lot of interesting but good things
I'm going to do that. I'm going to watch college football, obviously. But, like, I kind of want to do something for myself. I love my girlfriend to death, love her dearly, but she works a teacher schedule and I work this schedule, so we're weekend warriors. We really can't see each other much, if at all, during the week. Because she gets done from teaching around 3:30, and I got to be here, you know, around 5:30. So there's not a lot of time to see each other during the week. So we spend the majority of the weekend together. This is my first full weekend off, Oren. Months. So I'm going to give you a report back on Monday with what I decided to do with the rest of my time on the weekend.
Might hit a festival or something, or is there a concert in town you want to go see?
I'm going to, you know, everything's on the table.
Everything's
on the table. We'll see. I'm going to do something. I just don't know what it is yet. I got to clear the hurdle, get to 2 a.m. tomorrow night after the Falcons fly over.
And then it's downhill after that.
And then I wake up on Saturday morning and the world is my oyster. All right, oh, good job on the producer six pack. When we get back, let's get the latest on Caleb McGarry. Joe Patrick stopped by. What does he have for us? Hear it next. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, Odyssey app. This song was in Rock Band. Yeah, I wish I could enjoy this intro a little bit more, but given most of the subject matter we have to cover with our next guest, I cannot. But we still warmly welcome in Joe Patrick on the WadeFord.com hotline. Joe, let's just read the tweet, shall we? Falcons right tackle Caleb McGarry will miss time on the apparent leg injury suffered Wednesday, per source, who added the exact timetable was not immediately known, but for now, he's out of the lineup. Have you ever heard an update that was not an update like this update more in your entire life?
Seriously. In the business, we call that a non-update, which is what it is, because we all know that he was going to miss time. It's pretty obvious when a player cannot put weight on a leg and you've got a game in less than three weeks. What is it? We're 14 days, I guess, from today, from the first game of the season, not the Falcons' first game, but you get the point. It was very unlikely that he was obviously going to, be available for Tampa Bay. And, it's all speculation at this point. So you got to kind of put that first and foremost, but just seeing that tweet that he's going to miss time, but it's unknown to me, that's signaling that it is definitely like a long-term injury. And it's just a matter of whether it's going to be half the season or potentially the whole thing. But either way, it's not a good situation for the Falcons right now. And then obviously with the news about Storm Norton, they came out about an hour after that.
Okay, so we know Elijah Wilkinson was the guy that stepped in just for the remainder of that practice. But what are the Falcons' long-term options here? If they need one, potentially they have to go get somebody, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think part of it depends on how certain they are about Storm Norton, that he's going to be able to come back and be ready to play. And like, if that is right after the week 5 bye, which by the way, now feels like it comes at a fortuitous time because it gives the team this break in play that they kind of need to get the situation sorted out. If they feel like he's ready to play, after that bye, I don't know if you necessarily want to like do anything too drastic, and maybe you just play Charlie Warner more to like chip and help and do those kinds of things. But you'd like to think that there's some solution for this, some like convenient solution that's out there, and I just don't know if there is, Chris, because tackles are such a commodity in the NFL. It's the reason why the Falcons signed Caleb McGarry to that extension, is because you just don't let players like that hit free agency. Quality tackles don't hit free agency. We don't see those kinds of deals typically struck. That's why teams are constantly devoting top draft capital to the position. And, the Falcons have done that with Caleb McGarry, Jake Matthews, and Chris Lindstrom. These are all first-round picks. And when you lose one, it makes it really tough. And, You know, obviously you lose a good swing tackle in Storm Norton as well, who you had like as backup in case something like this were to happen. Now, I think maybe the silver lining is that you do look at Storm Norton, and I guess not silver lining, but you look at Storm Norton, and he was just a practice squad pickup from the Chargers, I believe it was, a couple years ago. So that's, I think, more of what the Falcons are looking at here, is trying to acquire a player that maybe a team is going to cut that they like. And I'm sure that Terry Fontenot and Kyle Smith, and you know, the days leading up to cut day on Tuesday and in the days afterwards, I'm sure are going to be talking to those teams about, you know, those tackles that they may be willing to part with that the Falcons really like. I'll tell you right now, like, what happens is, like, the Falcons will have a database of players. They will have, like, scouted the NFL completely and have a list of tackles up at the very top, you know, the best tackles in the league, and, you know, a lot of these kind of practice squad level players. And I'm sure there are some out there that they like more than others, and those are probably the players that are maybe some distressed assets out there that they feel like they can make a deal for. I think it's interesting that yesterday we saw there was four trades in the NFL around the league, and they're not major trades, but they're these little deals for, you know, to acquire, you know, a receiver and usually swap a seventh round pick for one or whatever. And I feel like the Falcons are probably in position to do something like that, where they, you know, target one of those kinds of tackles that maybe could get cut that they really like, and they want to make sure they get them over anybody else on waiver claims. So they go ahead and potentially make a trade for, you know, a low level pick so that the team gets something in return for that player. So it'll be very interesting days ahead. I would expect the Falcons to be very active talking to teams around the league.
Well, if there's a silver lining, I saw a trade like Harrison Phillips, who's a really good defensive tackle, went to the Jets, I think, for a conditional six round pick. So there are moves that can be made. Maybe, I'm guessing not, since we haven't heard any rumblings of this, could you move Bergeron outside and put Wilkinson inside?
I mean, it's one of those theoretically possible. It almost feels like an academic argument where it's like, yeah, you know, you can kind of justify it in your head. Whether that actually makes sense, like practically, I have a lot, you know, more skepticism about, because just in my opinion, it feels like the more players you're moving into different positions, the more opportunities you have for it to kind of go sideways. And, you know, there's obviously the Bergeron to right tackle. I've also heard, I'm sure you've heard it, Chris, too, also flipping Jake Matthews to the blind side to play right tackle and then play Bergeron at left tackle, because Bergeron played left tackle in college. He didn't play right tackle. So maybe you put the more experienced player on the side that's playing a quote unquote like new position on the other side of the line. But again, I'm not a fan of any of these things. I think what I'm a fan of, and again, especially if you feel like you're getting Storm Norton back relatively soon after that bye, then, you know, I think you just go with the best option that you can get at that right tackle position, whether that is Elijah Wilkinson or whether it's one of these other players that's on another roster right now. And again, I think this could affect, you know, how the team uses Kyle Pitts and how they use Charlie Warner and how they try to help that right tackle through these four games and making sure that they're keeping Michael Penix as clean as possible. I'm sure that he's going to have an extra eye on that side of the line, which of course is his blind side, which just kind of, you know, just twists the knife on how painful this injury is, because there's only two teams in the NFL that losing a right tackle would affect quite to the extent that it is here, and that is obviously here in Miami. So just a really, really tough injury situation for the team right now.
Speaking of Darnell Mooney, I'm just going to say his name and tell me what you know.
Well, I mean, I'll go beyond Darnell Mooney. Like, Chris, is getting, you know, it's getting concerning just the wide receiver room in general right now, I would say, because he hasn't played since that first training camp practice where he hurt his shoulder. Kadarrell Hodge has not practiced this week with what Raheem Morris referred to as tightness. I don't know exactly what's tight, that was not disclosed. But again, the nice thing is in a couple of weeks, in about 10 days or so, whenever it is, we'll get an official injury report and actually have some body parts to put to some of these players, because frankly, right now, they're not obligated to say anything about the injuries. And so Kadarrell Hodge has missed practice with tightness this week. And then Ray-Ray McCloud also left practice. It really got overshadowed. He was actually the first player to leave practice with an injury before McGarry was carted off. he was running some routes on air, kind of pulled up lame after a catch, and you could see a trainer kind of working on him on the side, trying to stretch something out in the legs, and ultimately was not able to return to practice. So that's a starter for you on offense. And if you don't have him, you don't have Hodge, and you don't have Mooney, you know, that's three receivers. And when it comes to then putting together a team that's going to go out there and play week one, that means you might have to carry some extra receivers on that 53-man roster, which then means you're going to have to, you know, you can't carry guys in other positions. So it becomes kind of a mass problem for the Falcons when they come to a cut day on Tuesday.
So basically what you're saying is Jalen Walker and James Pierce Jr. better be damn good against Tampa out of the gate in week one.
but that's essentially
what's going on. All right, so when it does come to the defense, what roster battles are you looking at come Friday night versus Dallas?
Yeah, well, I think it'll be really interesting. Natrone Brooks is going to go out there and apparently play the nickel. Raheem Morris said that on Wednesday, that he's going to play nickel for the team in this game. And that's interesting because I think that he's a legitimate option to be this team's nickel back, frankly. Like, he hasn't kind of been talked about in this nickel competition because – obviously, the coaching staff has kind of planned for Billy Bowman to fill that role, and he does, honestly. Like, if I were to bet on a player that is the predominant nickel back for this team this season, it will be Billy Bowman. But I think that Natrone Brooks can do a really good job, and I think that if he is able to stand out as a nickel in this game, then that's going to give him just more utility for the team. And again, when you talk about, like, if you're short on numbers for the roster because you got to carry – whatever it is, extra offensive linemen or extra wide receivers or whatever, you need players who are versatile, who can give you, who can, you know, you can put in a lot of different spots and fill a lot of different holes for you in terms of, you know, the roles that you need out there on the field. And so I think that he's definitely one I'm watching. And like, I would say like a player like Clark Phillips is worth watching, but he's not going to play. And I think that, you know, for a player like him, you know, he's kind of, I've been saying this for a while now, but he's kind of on the outside looking in for making this team just because he hasn't been able to get out there and play. And, you know, while you have some bank of knowledge with him versus off of what he's done as a professional throughout his career, you know, it is a new defensive coordinator, and he, I'm sure, wants to see how he kind of fits in the scheme, especially if it's kind of a lighter box that they're going to be playing with. If they're going to be playing with a nickel a lot, you need that interior cornerback to be able to, like, step up and run support and plug those gaps in the run game. So, and he's not a big body, obviously. He's, like, one of the smallest corners in the NFL. So, tough spot for him, unfortunately. And I think that that's where Natrone Brooks has an opportunity to really step up and show that he can be that guy and kind of fit, make his run fits and cover guys in the slot.
What do you think the likelihood is that Xavier Watts earns the starting safety job?
I'm so torn on this. I feel like it's a coin flip, honestly, at least for week one. I mean, I think over the course of the season, we will see him eventually earn that job. But, you know, at safety in particular, that position, it's so much about you know, having the knowledge of the scheme and an understanding of anticipating how, you know, opposing receivers are going to develop their route concepts and just being able to kind of think ahead and be able to anticipate and arrive in spots. That's what Jesse Bates is so good at, and that's the reason why he's able to make these big-time interceptions and these game-changing plays. I think Xavier Watts, obviously in college, he's shown the ability to do that, but it's, you know, it's a different speed in the NFL, and it's obviously a new system that he's taken up, and I think that just from my eye, he's been like a little bit slower to react in some of these situations than maybe we would have seen from him at Notre Dame. And it's worth, you know, acknowledging that he's going up against, you know, a proven veteran player in Jordan Fuller, who I think the team likes what they've seen out of him so far this training camp. And I know that, you know, maybe this certainly is coach speak for sure, but I'll repeat what Jeff Ulbrich said, which is that, you know, they've got position battles and he said three or four different roles on the starting defense, but he said that he's very confident in however those starting battles ultimately turn out because they have had the competition and they like what they've seen in those battles that is going to give them a good player regardless of who ends up winning.
To the best of your knowledge, what's going on with Troy Anderson? I didn't really understand the most recent update.
Yeah, I mean, it's really secretive about what's going on with him. And, you know, I thought the thing that made me kind of got my ears perked up was that Raheem Morris said he had a knee injury similar to what he had in college, and there wasn't really a whole lot of knowledge about a knee injury that he had in college, but it does turn out that he did hurt a knee in 2019 and then sat out the COVID year. So he basically did miss a year, and it sounds like this is like, you know, kind of like a season long or a year long type of recovery from a knee injury. We don't know more about what the knee injury is specifically other than that, but it kind of reminds me of the Kyle Pitts situation when he hurt his knee back in 2022. And, you know, it was just a longer recovery than anybody thought. And he even had some like lingering issues even when he did return to play. So, you know, I ultimately think that Troy Andersen probably gets activated off of PUP, put on the 53-man roster, and then put back on short-term IR and is probably there for, you know, obviously that means he's gone for at least four games. We'll see. Raheem Morris said, you know, he's like not rolling out for week one, which is, yeah, sure, I guess. But I think we're all anticipating him at least missing some time. I think the bigger question a lot of people had was actually, was he like so hurt he's going to miss the whole season? I don't think that's in play. I think that he will be, you know, play a role for the team at some point, but ultimately with Divine Diablo coming in, you know, his role is lessened, and you know, whatever they get from him feels like gravy at this point.
All right, before I let you go, is Carlos Washington out again this week? And if so, Nathan Carter, I mean, he's looked pretty good. If Carlos Washington doesn't play at all, how can he make the team?
Yeah, I agree. It's kind of similar to Clark Phillips. And it's not that I don't think that they would want these players around. Like when we talk about not making the team, I think that both Phillips and Carlos Washington Jr. would be guys they'd want on the practice squad. But if they're not healthy, then I don't see how they could justify them taking up a spot on that 53-man roster. So, yeah, I do think that they are in very similar positions. And Nathan Carter, on the other side of the coin, he, like, really showed some explosion, some burst. You wonder even if you could utilize that kind of speed on, like, kick returns and stuff, which they obviously have Jamal Agnew. They brought him in specifically for that. But I think that you can potentially find some roles for Nathan Carter in this offense because he provides something to you in that running back room that nobody else really has, maybe even has higher top end speed than even Bijan Robinson. So if you have a trait that's that special, then I think that there's always going to be room for you.
All right, Joel, appreciate the time. We'll look forward to chatting next week when we'll actually be talking about who made it and who didn't. I'm excited.
Should be exciting. Yep. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it, Joe.
When we get back, good stuff there from Joe Patrick. Appreciate him popping on as always. I've tried to tell you guys this for years. Starting on Dukes and Bell, moving here to Chris Thomas tonight. When athletes do this, it always means something. Oren and I will discuss to close out the show when we get back. Don't go anywhere. It's Chris Thomas tonight. Last chance for romance here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is Chris Thomas Turtle with you until the top of the hour. I try to tell y'all, sometimes you just need to listen to Cousin Turtle. He knows a thing or two. You want to know what just happened, Oren? In response, well, let's take it back. Let's rewind it back to a couple hours ago. A podcast drops between Michael Irvin and Jerry Jones. It's a good get. I wonder how he got him.
Yeah, he knows somebody.
Yeah. And he got him to admit, meaning Michael got Jerry to admit, what happened between Micah Parsons, his team, and the Cowboys. According to Jerry, they had filled out all the dots, crossed all the T's, dotted all the I's in terms of a new contract that would make Micah Parsons the highest paid player in the NFL, non-QB. Sent it to the agent, David Mulugeta, who has taken over as the new most powerful agent in the NFL. And his response back to Jerry was as follows. Stick it up your front. Okay. So in Jerry's terms, in Jerry's world, pun intended, the contract was done. All they needed to do was iron out some final little details, but the years, the compensation, all that kind of stuff was done. So that came out a couple hours ago. So everyone's like, well, what's Micah's perspective? What's the agent's perspective? And Oren, you know what Micah Parsons just did?
What'd he do, Chris?
He scrubbed his Instagram of all things Dallas Cowboys. Don't tell me, Oren Romain, when athletes do this stuff, that it doesn't mean anything.
It just, you know.
It means
spring
something.
Cleaning. No. They're sending a message.
And that message is, bleep you. Right now,
I don't want you anymore.
Trade my behind, kind sir. Jura. Funny story, Oren. When I first started working here, it was November of 2020. So it must have been the following NBA offseason. So like right around this time of 2021, I was still working with Dukes and Bell. I was the associate producer. I had your job. I was the associate producer for Dukes and Bell. And at the time, not being from here and not being somebody that was particularly invested nor interested in the Instagram of Trae Young, didn't know that Trae Young clears his Instagram out every year. I had no idea.
You saw that.
I saw that. And was like, holy crap, this is crazy. What's going on? And so I presented it to the guys, and they were like tangentially aware that he did that. So they kind of like were in on it. And listen, it's not something I would expect, you know, anybody to actually be aware of unless you're like the biggest Trae Young stan in the world. But the collection of us didn't know any better. And then we start making it a big deal on the air, right? And then I come to find out he does this every year. We had a lot of people calling in and texting in and letting us know. So,
but at the same time, this was sort of a big deal because guys just don't – Trae is the you know
– opposite to the rule.
Yeah, the opposite there, the outlier.
But the thing was, like, but the example was, and the funny part is, like, if, Oren, like, if you're not locked in on what Trae Young does every year, like, I just had no idea. So I saw this, and I was like, wait a minute, why did he delete all of his Hawk stuff off of his Instagram? He must want something. And that got us into a broader conversation about the modern athlete. And instead of, you know, holding a press conference or talking to a journalist, what they'll just do is scrub their Instagram. That's become the modern way of the modern athlete telling the media, I'm unhappy. I want a new contract. I want out. I want a trade. I want this, that, and third. But, Oren, I found out the hard way because I didn't know. And I ran with it. And I didn't know. I just didn't know. I was ignorant to the fact that Trae Young clears out his Instagram every offseason. But this one, there's no mistaking. This is a direct response to...
There's some backstory here that happened recently.
Yeah, there is a 0% chance this has anything to do with anything other than Jerry Jones going on Michael Irvin's podcast today and essentially throwing him and his agent under the bus saying, hey, this thing was done in my book, and this is y'all's doing now.
Does Jerry talk before the game tomorrow or after the game tomorrow?
It's a great question. It's a great question. Because I don't know. He does after regular season games.
Yeah, if I'm Schottenheimer, I don't want to have to answer those. Hey, defer to the owner. He's the one who just gave you guys a story and laid it all out about what happened during that contract negotiation.
Yeah, nobody's going to be up there at the podium after the game tomorrow. So your third string safety battle, coach, what did you see out there from player X?
Oh, no.
It's every question is going to be about Micah.
Micah, Jerry. Micah, Jerry. Micah, Jerry. Does Micah make the trip tomorrow?
How could you after this? This is raw. This is like fresh wound sort of stuff, man. I don't think he does. He's not playing. So even if he was like situated, he still wouldn't be playing.
This is the best thing and the worst thing to happen during the last preseason game, because it's going to be a huge storyline, but those games get kind of lull at the end, so it's good, I guess, to have that to fall back on to talk about when the game sort of, at any point the game gets.
Well, because the second half of the final preseason game is guys that are probably not going to make the team. For us here, I'll be looking at safety, nickel, obviously offensive line. That's priority number one. And then wide receiver depth, too. Isn't it crazy we still don't know what's going on with Darnell? Like, we just don't know anything.
Don't know anything.
He could be back tomorrow, or he could be back week five.
And Troy Anderson, we don't know about.
And that was bizarre.
Jalen Walker, we kind of know about, but still don't know all the way about.
Why did Raheem say that there's a chance Troy Anderson could be ready for week one?
I have no idea. Like, for us to not be surprised, or to not be surprised if he ends up on the 53-man instead of the pup list when the cuts come through or the roster comes through?
I have no idea.
I get during training camp, you're not really obliged. You don't have to say anything about injuries.
Oh, and they take full advantage of that.
And just keep it as quiet as kept over there, man. But
at a certain point, it backfires, because then me and you are sitting on the megawatt radio station, home of the Falcons, discussing what's going on, because we don't have all the answers.
If you don't want us to make assumptions,
tell us.
Tell us something.
It's pretty simple. All right, 404-726-0929. Good job, Bo. I appreciate everybody that checked in throughout the show and throughout the program. Hit me up at CT tonight, 929, if you didn't vote on the poll. And tomorrow night, we got Falcons flyover. I'll be on as soon as the postgame show with Mike and Grant is over. I'll be taking your calls, final roster predictions, and all that, and much more. This has been Chris Thomas Tonight on Sports Radio, 929 The Game.